news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Out of the Ordinary, the Big Ball Broadcast.
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abear, and all the world sees.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 137, all the geeky news you can use. All of it, damn you. Part of thegeekmedia.com. Visit our official website at thebigballbroadcast.com. Also streaming live on Stickam most Thursdays, if not every damn Thursday. We try to anyway. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. My name is Kyle Abear, an anime and video game voice actor from the West Coast.
And your co-host from the East Coast, otherwise Steve. I'm a musician with Perimeter of the Void and a music mogul with EBE Records.
He is great googly mogly. Coming up on this fine episode, we'll be talking about why Avatar isn't really the box office champ. We're going to talk about the other Avatar, a.k.a. The Last Airbender. Can a new Super Bowl trailer actually redeem M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong's career? Will your big screen Super Bowl party violate copyright law? Microsoft is sued over Xbox Live points. And we have a special guest, OMG. Well, not really OMG. It's actually OMFG. And it doesn't stand for what you think. We'll be talking to Lido from this brand new Original Media for Gamers podcast network. But before we get to all that, Steve, what the hell's going on?
Everything and at the same time, nothing. Nope, no Permanent the Void news, no new EBE Records news. I've been caught up with my day job. And yeah, back to you, Kyle.
I've been broke, not working. Been applying at grocery stores quickly to find out no one's hiring, and it sucks to be a voice actor right now. Yay!
We're having a great positive week, I can see.
Yeah, I know. I did have a great weekend. I went to San Francisco. Did not get to see the city, unfortunately, but had a great time at Animation on Display and had some delicious Korean barbecue. And this weekend, I'm going to Arkansas, Fayetteville, Arkansas, for BlakeCon, the first time con. Me and other anime voice actor guests include Travis Willingham, Laura Bailey, Clarine Harp, and Troy Baker. And we'll be having it fun in the deep south there, I reckon. Other than that, let's see. Gosh, it's going to be like trying to find a job, I imagine. Calling my extras casting hotline each and every day, only to find out they don't need a big bald guy in his 40s with a goatee. They need like jugglers with mariachi guitars and Asians with buck teeth and like really, really specific looks. But I did have a friend tell me who does this all the time, that if I paid $60 a month to join an extras casting calling service, they would do all the hotline calling and all the casting stuff, and then they would actually end up booking me. So they're kind of like an agent. So I may actually take the hit to the wallet and make the investment, because she works all the friggin' time. And being an extra, by the way, folks, is not glorious. It's not fun. It's a lot of sitting around on the set, but at least you're being paid to be bored. And I could definitely afford that luxury right about now. I like how Cooley South Kid in the chat room says, I'll be the next Miley Cyrus. What the hell does that mean? What is going on in our chat room? You guys really should try and catch the Big Ball Broadcast when we stream live on Stickam, stickam.com/bigballbroadcast. You can be witness to the amazing, amazing antics of everyone in here. We've got Queen Lol yielding the ban hammer. Hasn't banned anyone yet, but who knows? Maybe someone, and Otherworld Steve, you keep trying to get banned, but I don't think you can because you're an admin.
It's like my only big request in life. Other than getting my cat to shut the hell up right now, I want to get banned. I so want to get banned from the chat.
Well, who knows? It's something. It's a goal. We'll keep going with that. Of course, behind the scenes, and I don't know if he's made a decision yet as to what he's going to do during the actual show, whether it's going to be playing House of the Dead Overkill on the Wii because it was a bargain for only $20, and he's needed a reason to whip out the light gun controller. But good old Mark Swint. Hello to Mark, and kudos for keeping us on the air, keeping us edited, keeping us maintained on thebigballbroadcast.com. But right now, let's answer some emails before we get to our special guest. Let's open up our inbox at thebigballbroadcast.com. Got a couple of emails and an MP3 comment, but we're going to start with our emails. Hey, Kyle and Steve, it's Charlie, or Hero 004. First off, thanks for continuing to make great shows every week. It remains my favorite thing to listen to when I'm working out or in the evenings when I'm winding down. I could comment on a million things that y'all talk about, but instead I'd like to ask your opinion on something else. You guys have mentioned it a couple of times. What are your thoughts on the remake of The Wolfman coming out on February 12th? It was filmed back in 07, but is just now coming out after a lot of reshoots and re-edits. I think it has a lot of promise with such a talented cast, Benicio del Toro, Anthony Hopkins, Hugo Weaving, and it's staying true to the plot of the 1941 version, which means a lot to me since that's among my favorite films ever. The score sounds pretty kick-ass on the trailers, too. I think if this one does well, it would be awesome if Universal revived more of their monster legacy movies, as they like to call them. What do you think? Does it look interesting enough for you guys to go see it? Thanks again for pushing on with the podcast, and Mark has done a fantastic job with retooling the website and managing live shows. Take care, Hero 004. I can't say I'm totally bowled over with the Wolfman trailers, but yeah, I'll go check it out. I'm a horror fan, and it would be nice. I mean, honestly, I'm surprised the Wolfman got greenlit or got fast-tracked into production. Well, not fast-tracked. It's been sitting on the shelf, apparently, a couple years, but, you know, we've seen hits on the news or the movie news, the news wire about possible remakes of Creature of the Black Lagoon, which I know me and Steve were really kind of championing back when we actually talked to the guy who wore the creature costume back in the 1950s version. He unfortunately passed away a couple years ago, but we did have an interview with him back on my old website, kylehebert.com, the old first iteration of that website. I will probably go check it out. I don't think it's going to be blowing everyone away because, you know, it is a period piece. And I think with the advent of technology, today's ADD generation, is someone that turns into a wolf really going to bring the audiences in the way that, dare I say, Twilight did? I don't think it will.
I don't know, man. There have been some pretty decent werewolf flicks. I loved American Werewolf in London. That was probably my first adolescent exposure, early adolescent exposure to the whole werewolf genre. Unfortunately, you know, everything Universal's done, it's been rehashed. I mean, it's really hard to relaunch a vampire franchise when you have Twilight, and it's really hard to relaunch the Mummy franchise when it was relaunched with Brendan Fraser, and it's kind of laughable and mockable. And shit, they are doing a Creature of the Black Lagoon relaunch. And sadly, you know, Ben Chapman knew about this before his passing, so he had to take that sad news to his grave. For the Wolfman, yeah, I mean, not necessarily the most standout of characters, not really something I'm, you know, waiting to see. I think Underworld gave us enough of that. I really don't think we need much more. But there's also the news that they're relaunching, retooling Teen Wolf. So we're going to be dealing with werewolves for the next few years, whether we kind of like it or not.
And I'm not so sure I'm good with that. Although I did read yesterday that they're considering the next Underworld movie in 3D and possibly in space.
And I still don't get that. I'm still literally sitting here scratching my head, and not because of the lice. Really, werewolves, vampires in space. But what's the chickie's name there? The hottie who plays the lead?
Kate Beckinsale.
Kate Beckinsale. She's already trying to find a way out. She's saying, I hope my role is really limited, and I kind of want to pave the way for somebody else to come in and assume this, because, I mean, this is kind of a franchise that's already gone on long enough. And I have to give kudos to her for acknowledging that, saying, keep my involvement in this project incredibly minimal. Let's pass the torch now before you know, destroy my career.
And what's ironic is that she's married to Len Wiseman, the director, and basically, well, one of the creators, anyway, of the Underworld trilogy thus far. But, you know, the in space thing, you've had Leprechaun in space, you had Friday the 13th in space, you've had Hellraiser in space.
Yeah, the Star Wars prequels.
The Star Wars prequels in space.
I look at those as horror B-movies nowadays, you know.
They are pretty horrific. Especially the Darth Vader Frankenstein moment. No, you know, yeah, that's truly. There's a Universal monster legacy for you, even though it's Fox. But, oh, I don't know. So, I mean, are you going to get off your ass and go see The Wolfman? I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but go ahead.
No, I'm not going to. The trailers don't even look provocative enough. We've talked a lot about the creativity that the people put behind making the trailers and, you know, the high impact. And this is why you really want to see the film. And I'm looking at it saying that this is the best of the best. And this is what you're trying to hook me into going to see this theatrically. You failed. And if you fail in a trailer, that's pretty sad.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're bringing in old Anthony Hopkins again, who, of course, was, you know, playing Van Helsing in the Dracula one, the relaunch from a decade ago with Gary Oldman as Dracula. And it's like, well, when in doubt, just bring Anthony Hopkins in. He's cool. He gives it cred. Not that there's anything wrong with Benicio del Toro. He's a really cool actor and kind of an unconventional choice because he's not really a Brad Pitt type. But maybe that's what they're going for. Maybe, but who knows? I don't see it doing too well. Maybe it'll do okay opening weekend just because. And then, like everything else, you know, at least it'll drop by 50-60% in box office and then slowly dwindle away. Yeah, so there you go. And thank you again, Hero, for the kind words about the podcast and to Mark's job and on maintaining the site and keeping us edited and keeping us live and all that. I know that we love doing the show, and we wouldn't do the show unless you guys were there. So thank you all. There's a donate button on the website, thebigballbroadcast.com. Plug, plug. So Philip of Vermont writes, greetings from the world of tomorrow, or at least 3 hours ahead of you, Mr. Kyle Hebert. I wanted to say that I love this podcast. I was referenced it by Kerbifer himself via the two Wachow interviews you did with him and SciGuy, and would have said I started at 129, but have and still am catching up on previous ones before moving on to the more recent ones. Just curious, did you watch FMA yet? And you, Otherworld Steve, how goes Serenity? Anywho, no complaints. Oh, and you carry on with your behemoth belches, in my humble opinion, Steve. Okay? Yours in the ever-growing legion of geeks, Philip of Vermont. I could kill two birds with one stone. I can tell you right now, I know for a fact Steve has not watched Serenity, and I, for a fact, have not watched the rest of FMA. But I will try my darndest to watch FMA Brotherhood, which is going to be debuting on Adult Swim February 14th at midnight Eastern and Pacific. Finally, there, maybe, I don't know.
That's awesome news. That's awesome sauce. I really didn't think Adult Swim was going to jump back into the anime market, especially after their bumps for the last, you know, year have been poo on anime. I can understand, you know, harsh economic times, more people moving to the internet. To pay the licensing fee to show a brand new show, relatively brand new here in the States, yeah, it's going to cost a pretty penny, so it was kind of shocking. But I got to admit, for as much as a fan of the original series that I am, I really haven't checked out Brotherhood. I really haven't given it a chance, so I'm kind of happy it's going to be on Adult Swim, and I'll probably check it out that way. No, I haven't seen Serenity yet. I said when I finished my home theater, I would, and I still haven't finished my home theater, so I'm keeping to form. But Kyle should watch Fullmetal Alchemist, if only because he has a character in that show, and he should be able to interact more with his fans at cons and be able to talk in depth about the significance of Fullmetal Alchemist.
Well, the significance of my extremely minor character, Vato Fallman. Yes, absolutely. Well, let's fire off our next MP3 comment that comes from Deadly Lufa, from Deadly Lufa Radio, actually on par with the discussion of anime and what's going on with some of the older properties and everything. Let's hear from Deadly Lufa.
Hey, Big Bald Broadcast. This is Deadly Lufa here with a awesome question for you guys. With Funimation's announcement of them getting Dragon Ball Kai, I mean, who saw that one coming? How do you guys feel about anime companies taking old properties and remaking them? You know, shortening them or altering them, whether it be the Full Metal Alchemist approach by just redoing the whole damn thing, or Dragon Ball Z by cutting out most, if not all, the filler. There have even been talks about redubbing shows such as Sailor Moon. I ask this not as someone being in the industry. Kyle, we all know that you're happy because you get more work and get to yell and say next time on Dragon Ball Z at least 100 more times. But more as just fans of the media known as Animu. Ooh, ooh, ooh. That's all, guys. Love, peace, chicken grease.
Oh, Lufa, nice use of that phrase. Very nice. Love, peace, and chicken grease. So the older shows, yeah, some people would kind of roll their eyes saying, yeah, they're trying to just cash in, which exactly it is. It is a business after all. So Toye taking DBZ, remastering and re-editing it and chopping out all the fillers and calling it Dragon Ball Kai, which has been retitled in America, and people are kind of going through growing pains now because the show in America will be called Dragon Ball Z Kai. I don't know. I mean, that is what's kept Funimation afloat and for the ability to even afford Full Metal Alchemist and other licenses through the years. And the fans, it's kind of funny, kind of like Star Wars fans. The anime fans bitch and moan about being double, triple, quadruple dipped, but they keep buying it. And so as long as the sales figures are there, those shows will continue to come out. And what else can you say, right? It just comes down to the mighty dollar.
It's Dragon Ball Z, the special edition by George Lucas. It's, I don't know, as an artist, I'm kind of on the fence on the topic. As the artist, as the person that created a property, do you have the right to make changes? That's George Lucas's argument with the original Star Wars trilogy. I made it. I wasn't happy with what I made because of the technology at the time. Now that I have technology at my fingertips, and if I want to put in what my original vision was as the creator, I have the right to do that. And part of me really respects that. I guess it's hard for a creator to step outside themselves and observe it like a fan would. It's impossible to make that parallel. Fans look at it so much more differently. George Lucas was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and Stewart started the interview by just grilling Lucas. Like, do you know how you destroyed my childhood and raped my hopes and dreams and pooed in the franchise? And Lucas, I'm paraphrasing here, was kind of like, I don't care. But he wasn't like a prick about it. He was just like, I made a movie. You know, it's really not my fault that it turned into a religion and a way of life and this giant thing of pop culture. He's like, I just made a movie and it made money and I was able to make more movies. People care a lot more about it than he does. William Shatner tell the Star Trek fans to get a life, you know. It's kind of weird because, again, you can't draw that parallel. You can't know what it's like to be a fan of your own creation. So I don't really have a problem with it, I guess, in the end, with Dragon Ball Z. The biggest complaint is, yeah, the thing freaking drags forever at points. And even some Rectan issues with Vegeta, which is starting with the red hair and then going back to the black hair. I've caught some clips on YouTube. Oh, did I say that out loud? And they enhanced the graphics. Key blasts are all like CG now with all kind of stuff going on in the background. It's pretty weird. I've watched Dragon Ball Z more times than I can recount, and I've seen just about every version going back to the Canadian dub up through the Dragon Box sets now. I just got Volume 2. Yay. So I don't know. It's kind of cool to see something abridged with some more sparkle. You know, ooh, shiny. But other than that, to drop more coin on it at this point, no way. There's just no way I could financially aid and abet the situation.
Yeah, and I'm on the side of, I'm on the show, and if Funimation can throw me a bone, then yeah, if I happen to be in Texas, then I could get a free copy. But I've seen a lot of it too. And, you know, I think conceptually it sounds great, because the biggest complaint about even the most hardcore DBZ fan, they have to just admit that, yeah, it goes on for friggin' ever. And 75 episodes powering up and this, that, and the other. Why don't you trim that down and get to its core essence? I've always argued that DBZ could even be more well-regarded if you trim all the fat off the show and get to its thing. I mean, you see the whole Dragon Ball saga, actually. Well, maybe not GT, but, you know, Goku as a little boy, all these characters growing up, growing older, and seeing true character arcs in, you know, not 500 episodes. That's just the overkill, no matter how you slice it. Let's face it, at some point, these shows are going to jump the shark. So let's be happy that something like FMA and Cowboy Bebop had a limited shelf life and made you want more and left you like, oh, I wish there were more. But you know what the curse of that is? If they gave you more, at some point, it's going to be too much, too little, too late, all sort of thing.
But at the same time, properties like Star Wars and Dragon Ball Z, they've been around forever and they're going to be around forever. So having said that, you know, there's always going to be people introduced to this phenomenon. You know, my son's not old enough quite yet to grasp Star Wars or Dragon Ball Z, but I look forward to him seeing these shows. So he's going to be the next generation. So if Kai is his thing, if he gets a more streamlined, slicker looking product, I guess I really can't complain. I mean, God forbid he have to endure what I endured, 291 episodes. Let's get that down to about 100, you know, call it a day. And that was kind of Lucas's argument with Jon Stewart on the show, saying, you know, the prequels were made for kids. I'm sorry you grew up, but I bet your kids loved it. And you think about it in retrospect, like, yeah, kind of hit the nail on the head. Kyle, when you and I saw Star Wars, we were kids. We were 5, 6, 7 years old. And it was part of our childhood. I guess when you grow up, if you're on the outside looking in, it looks a little bit differently. But did kids dig it? Must have, because things still banked.
Yeah, I would. You know, wait till these kids grow up and what are they going to say? Oh, Star Wars changed my life. Like, oh, what? The original trilogy from the 70s? No, episode 1, 2, and 3. Like, really?
But yeah, that just makes us sound old because we are. And what I mean, maybe a 7, 8, 9 year old could go in and watch Avatar and say, "Oh my God, it changed my life. It was like I've seen something I've never seen before." And which, to be fair, I mean, everyone can shit all over the story and this, that, and the other, and James Cameron, blah, 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 blah. It's so terrible. It's so overexposed, blah, blah, blah. But if you're a little kid, you go in and you see this 3D experience that is really unlike any others. That could be a defining moment for their childhood, you know, like, or Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter for kind of the in-between generations, I guess, between the original trilogy and then now when we're old and bitter and cynical. Give us a nice email or an MP3 comment. You too can get nice and involved in the fun. Mail, M-A-I-L, at thebigballbroadcast.com. That's where you can send your feedback. You can even submit stories too. That's the cool part. Just include a link to the original story so we can make sure and give it proper credit. But if you have question, comments, suggestions, whatnot, please send it to mail at thebigballbroadcast.com. And of course, occasionally we'll be able to acknowledge you here in our chat room if you come by our live stream on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We have a special guest, ladies and gentlemen. He is from the OMFG Podcast Network. And OMFG stands for Original Media for Gamers. We're going to welcome Lido to our broadcast in just a few minutes. So hang tight. You are listening to the Big Ball Broadcast.
Hey there, hey there, oh there, warning, the following promo may contain some profanity, like, fuck, shit, fuck, ass, bitch, and mother. If you're offended by any of the previously mentioned words, well, then you're sure not gonna like this next segment.
Yeah, so here's some clips from Deadly Loofah Radio. Enjoy the cluster, fuck.
I got 10 purpley purpleys, and I'd like to advise everyone, they do not taste like purples.
The tire wasn't in the trunk, I was sitting there literally holding the fucking tire.
Oh, they caught him stealing rims.
That's
Ace. Is it working?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that why my crotch is just like hell?
Merry Christmas!
Oh, God!
Wait a minute. So the story just went from you guys in the back of the cop car to Roxy's crotch.
Yeah, crotch.
Welcome to DLR.
Well, your mom's gonna hear about this later. I am so fucked.
Yeah, it's that stupid. Yeah, check us out on iTunes. Just search Deadly Loofah Radio. Or check us out on Stick'em as well, stick'em.com/DeadlyLoofah. We're there, we promise.
From the Internet Olympic Stadium of the Internet, it's Anime Olympics.
Anime Olympics, where we review new anime, old anime, and pretty much anything else we want.
And we do other things we want, because we can.
That's right. If you wanted to do what you wanted, you could have your own show.
Anime Olympics starring Christina V and Steve Racer can be found at AnimeOlympics.net and also YouTube channel Anime Olympics.
Hey anime fans, are you ready for the ultimate anime podcast? Then get ready for the Rising Sun podcast. The Anime Mavericks are ready to give you all the anime news, reviews, and interviews you crave. And speaking of interviews, our first episode features the Big Ball Broadcast Zone, Kyle Hebert. So head over to animemavericks.co.cc and check out The Wastelander, The Lady K-Roo, The Karate Bum, The Hybrid Rain, and me, The Shades, as we bring you the Rising Sun Podcast. We'll see you there!
Hi, this is Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, director of Naruto, Cowboy Bebop, singer on Silent Hill, as well as the voice of Major Kusanagi from Ghost in the Shell. And you're listening to the Big Bald Broadcast with all the geeky news you can use.
Welcome back. Episode 137, in your face, in your ears, in your head, with Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve. Now we're going to welcome to our roundtable discussion our special guest, Lido from the OMFG Podcast Network. Hello, Lido.
Well, good evening, guys.
So, this OMFG thing, Original Media for Gamers. I'm thinking that you're a big video game nut, yeah?
You know, a lot of people guess that. I don't know where people get that, but oddly enough, I am. It's really surprising. I actually am.
Okay, so tell us about the genesis of this whole project, because a podcast network, people just think, okay, all right, it's a couple of shows, but you're kind of taking things to the next level, right? This is kind of like stuff that's streaming around the clock.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to go back to the very beginning. The project originated almost 4 years ago when a couple of us had the idea that maybe we want to take the live broadcasting thing to a new level. A lot of us work with different podcasting organizations or live broadcasting groups, and we were kind of spread out between groups of friends. It wasn't really a concerted effort at the time, but as the years have gone by, we've been building up and saying, yeah, we want to do this, we want to do this, we want to do this, kind of getting ourselves organized, figuring out which each of us is good at, where our talents are, and only very recently have we really had the resources and the means to do this project, to actually get this project going. And it's so exciting to finally do it. What it is, it is a 24/7 live broadcasting station, we like to say, where we really entertain towards gamer culture. We don't want to say gamers, but gamer culture, the lifestyle, because a lot of us do live the lifestyle of gamers. For relaxing, to relax, we don't always go out to bars. We, you know, sit at home and stare at a screen, which, as negative as that connotation is, that's what we do, and we love it. That's what we do for fun. That's how we almost, with some people, how we base relationships off of. That's our lives. So we entertain to that specific area of people. I'm forgetting my words. I'm not doing a very good job of this.
Forgetting how to speak. You can't form words.
I don't speak the good English. Sorry, that was rude of me. I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, too late. It's already out there.
Yeah. I did, by the way, I mentioned this real quick over on thegeekmedia.com as well as in the IRC that OMFG runs. I'm trying to get you guys more listeners.
Oh, yay. Thank you. We like that.
I like helping people out.
We like being helped. We need a crutch. We have vices, right. Damn it.
That's right. Steve needs cigarettes. Mark needs cigarettes. You have to pay for their gaming habits.
Cigarettes. That's expensive enough as is. But for myself specifically, I host a show over on thegeekmedia.com as well as on omfg.fm called R&D. We actually had you on an episode as an interview, Kyle. That was a while back, though. August, September?
Yeah, it was like last summer.
That was a while ago. We actually need to get you on a live show sometime soon. It'd be so much fun. We do. It's a late night show. R&D's a late night format where we swear a good bit. But it's a fun environment. And then I also do a show called The Council of Six, which is a lore show that bases itself off of Warcraft, StarCraft, and Diablo lore. A friend of mine, one of the co-hosts, is also going to do a Lost Vikings segment at one point in time. I don't know when she is, but she is. So, Lost Vikings fans, there you go. I got nothing.
Very. You got nothing. Now, are you really taking this whole undertaking just by yourself, or do you have just a whole crew of people just bundled together to?
Oh goodness.
To give you content.
Oh goodness. As I mentioned earlier, it started out as a group of friends thing where we were all acquaintances or, you know, coworkers, and we all had this idea and we kept adding to it and taking stuff away and refining it. It took a while, though. And a lot of people have joined up with us on this idea. And some have left. I left for a time specifically to start the Geek Media. But I ended up coming back and rejoining the group and saying, yes, I want to be a part of this. There's at least 24 or 25 of us involved at certain levels. We have the board of directors. There are specific department heads. It's a very well-organized effort, but at the same time, we're not bogged down by a lot of bureaucracy. I like where we're at now and where we're going towards. We just had our launch February 1st, but the actual effort of the business has been going for a couple months now.
So are you guys thinking of that big $10 word, monetization? Is there premium content, subscription models, or is it all free with streaming ads?
Right now, it's all you know, just like a radio station. You can tune in whenever you want. What you hear is everything we have. We're trying to aim for an advertisement model where we play advertisements on the stream. That's how we plan on making our money. Our overhead is very small, though. But that's one reason that we were able to do this. Our overhead is minuscule compared to what an actual terrestrial radio station has to pay a month. It's you know, I don't want to say that this is the new evolution of radio, but it certainly is something that moved forward. We're moving forward with the idea of what radio is, and we're progressing that idea.
Well, yeah, like when Steve and I first came up with the Big Ball Broadcast back in 2005, podcasting was in its infancy, and it was like a buzzword thrown out by, I almost said Adam Sandler, the
Adam
other
Curry.
Adam who used to be
Adam Curry.
Used to be, the big VJ at MTV and all that. And it's like, and it really invigorated me coming from radio to take things to the next level and present original content that was specifically aimed at a particular audience. It wasn't just, well, I want to get on a heavy metal station and do a show about video games. No, I actually want to do a show about video games and have it be available on demand for an audience. You know, streaming was at the time something completely different and, you know, probably out of reach for most people, just couldn't afford it. But now there's all these different avenues that are cheap or free type things. I'm imagining bandwidth for running a streaming 24/7 network is not quite free, but
no, it's not.
yeah. But we've enjoyed, you know, through the inventions of, you know, Stickam, we've seen other alternate things like Blip TV and Ustream and all that. Now, all these different content providers are giving power to the people, and I think it's exciting times.
Absolutely. And we actually, how OMFG operates, we broadcast through an IceCast stream. It was the best possible option that we have, and it's a very solid, reliable server, except for certain problems that I had earlier while trying to do one of my shows. But beside the point, we had a couple issues with getting the stream working with a program called Mumble. It's similar to Ventrilo, if everyone listening understands the name. It's higher quality and a lot less lag than Ventrilo has, so we use it for our broadcast of Council of Six.
Okay. All right. We at the Big Ball Broadcast are sticking with Skype. It's been problematic, but over time, it's gotten a little better. Every new update, it's a little bit better.
You know, I would say Skype is a very solid, reliable service. If you have two or three hosts like this, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic program. When you have six, though, it gets really unhappy. I almost said a bad word. I'm trying to censor myself.
You don't have to. This show's gone to the dogs.
Skype gets pissy when you have more than four or five people on at once. So we had to figure out another reasonable option, and Ventrilo wasn't. As a solid program as it is, it's not a good option for broadcasting. The sound quality is too horrible.
Yeah, I hear that.
The first thing that jumps into my head is it difficult to get that much content? And what's in it for the other people that are providing all this content? I mean, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that seems very, very demanding.
Well, it's a situation of most of the time we're actually broadcasting archives. It's not like we're live 24/7. That would be completely unfeasible, and the demands on our server would be too much. So half the time it's just feeding archives, replays of old shows. Usually it tries to select more recent ones in its random generator, but sometimes it picks up an older one, which it's fine. It works. We have a couple different live shows. We tried to, when we were making the schedule, we tried to make sure there was at least one live show a day. So there's always something going on every single day of the week. But we have, 14 shows. So there's always, a show going on. If you pick a day, there is going to be a show on sometime. It's just not constantly live.
So you're basically kind of loading up a playlist, and then that's what's broadcasting through IceCast.
Most of the time, yes. One thing we try to do, though, and we do successfully, is we make sure everything's legal. We're not about to play, music that isn't licensed to us. If we do play licensed music, we pay for it. We make sure we go through all the proper channels. We aren't necessarily under the oversight of the FCC, but we tend to try and follow certain FCC regulations at times, too. We're trying to make this as a professional effort as possible. And doing going through those motions, we believe, is an important part of making sure our broadcasts are as high quality as possible.
I mean, it's commendable to want to keep everything as professional as possible, do things, and you don't want any drama. You don't want bands coming after you and saying, hey, we didn't give you the authorization to play that, this, that, and the other, especially when you get into that gray area where your business model is starting to supporting revenue. It's like, hey, oh, you guys are making money. You can afford to pay for the use of this song or this, that, and the other. But I guess, you know, there's other things too. The podcast safe, I guess, music network, it has some sort of name like that where you can, you know, you can play anything on there for free as long as you, you know, you're on an honor system. You have to just give, you know, credit to the author or the musician or the band or whatever in your podcast, in your liner notes or whatnot.
Crickets there. All right. You know what? Let's jump right back into the show. I'll lead us off with a story down in Wonderland. This comes from SciFiWire.com. They're discussing why Avatar isn't really the box office champ.
And, oh, dear.
Kyle, I'm not saying this with a snicker or a sneer. but they say, while we've been writing a lot about how James Cameron's Avatar has been breaking all kinds of box office records and how it is now the highest grossing film of all time of dollar receipts, now at more than $2 billion, but they have noted, and we've tried to be mindful of it as well, that the numbers come with a bunch of caveats. The sci-fi epic that doesn't take into account inflation, higher ticket prices, especially for 3D theaters, foreign currency fluctuations, etc. So is Avatar all that when you factor in all those elements? The Los Angeles Times tried to get at the answer. And they say, after all, if we're writing about the all-time box office champ in terms of actual ticket admissions, it would still be Gone with the Wind, David O. Selznick's 1939 sweeping historical romance that has riveted moviegoers for generations. If you put together an all-time box office chart adjusted for inflation, Gone with the Wind remains the undefeated unrivaled champion, having earned an astounding $1.45 billion in ticket sales over the years. As box office girl Hollywood.com's Paul Derbacon told me yesterday, you never want to say never, but that's a record I don't think will ever be broken. In an adjusted for inflation all-time box office top 10, Gone with the Wind is an easy winner, with George Lucas's 1977 Star Wars in the number 2 slot with $1.26 billion in grosses, followed by 1950's Sound of Music, 1982's E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and 1956's The Ten Commandments. By that measure, Cameron's Titanic ranks 6th with $955 million, and Avatar doesn't even break the top 10. I kind of talked about this a few podcasts back where I said it's kind of unfair to look at the box office money, because if a lot of the tickets were sold in IMAX with a much inflated ticket price over your standard theater fare, it certainly skews the numbers. And there's kind of a push now across the internet to say, well, movies should be ranked on ticket sales and not ticket price. Go by the numbers of tickets sold per theater instead of the actual dollar amount. And I think that would give a much more accurate idea of where the big picture really is. I think Avatar is somewhere around like 26 if you look at tickets sold compared to dollar amounts. And not that I'm really calling out Avatar in particular. I just think it's flawed math, and we should look at it more realistically instead of putting this movie up on a pedestal where it really doesn't deserve those accolades.
I hate to be negative about this kind of thing, because I know I technically speaking haven't seen Avatar, but I'm going to bag on it, because from everything I've seen, everything about the movie, the storyline, the characters, I don't like it. I really can't stand it. If you want to go see Avatar, don't waste your money. Go see Dances with Wolves or Pocahontas. It's the exact same story.
I would argue that while that is true, it is Dances with Wolves meets Pocahontas meets Braveheart with a sci-fi backdrop. I think it's a lot more interesting visually, and, you know, being a sci-fi film, that's kind of the draw. I mean, it's shot for 3D, it's shot for IMAX, it's meant to be a cinematic event, something to go enjoy in the theater, and I've seen it twice, and I'm not going to say that if you saw it, Lito, or if you saw it, Steve, or Mark, if anyone here who loves to bag on Avatar aren't actually going to change their mind about it, probably not. But for me, I like it. And they love to give me crap about being a sheep and all this, that, and the other. And I'm a big James Cameron fan. And it's not the greatest thing since sliced bread. And does it deserve to be the greatest money maker of all time? No, but I don't think Gone with the Wind deserves to be either. That's a generational thing. I saw it. Yeah, I can see why it's, you know, considered a classic, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, if you want to look at older movies that mean a lot more to me, go to the other one from that year, Wizard of Oz. geez, I mean, really? Gone with the Wind? Or Citizen Kane? You know, well, again, I'm not really much for classic films, but yeah.
You're not really looking at the accolades or the Oscars that these films obtained. You're looking at actual tickets sold. You know, by numbers of tickets sold adjusted for inflation, those are the hard numbers. And I guess you really can't take that away. If Gone with the Wind made so much money, then, you know, it's factual. It's not subjective anymore. I think the way people are looking at Avatar makes it become incredibly subjective when you're looking at dollar amount coming in. And if people understand that, maybe that'll put that movie in perspective, you know, because I know I haven't seen Avatar. And again, the biggest challenge to me saving Avatar is it's not really easy for me to go to an IMAX theater. It's not something that's incredibly accessible for everybody who lives in the West. I have to wait for it to come out on DVD or Blu-ray. And I know as soon as I purchase it on DVD or Blu-ray, I'm not getting the same experience at home. I'm not going to be able to talk about the same type of visual aspects that turned you onto it when it comes to the home market. It's not going to happen. But again, I think due ticket sales, when we look at the film realistically, we can say, okay, this isn't the greatest film ever. You know, it's not even in the top 10 of greatest films. So knock it down a little bit. And maybe Hollywood won't jump, you know, so much on this damn 3D thing. Now we got Harry Potter coming out in 3D and Iron Man 2 coming out in 3D. And I don't need the gimmicks. I want accessibility.
You mentioned perspective. And I think, especially with my opinion on it, even with everyone's opinions on Avatar, it's a very people either love it or hate it. And most of the people that hate it, including myself, haven't even seen it. You need to take things into perspective, like how what kind of videos you specifically enjoy. For me, I actually enjoy watching every single Star Wars movie. There isn't a Star Wars movie I don't love. 1 through 6. I love every single one of them. My greatest joy is watching them all in a row, back to back. I've done that 4 or 5 times in my lifetime so far. I plan on doing it a lot more. But you have to take that into account. And there's no way that statistics are ever going to take that into account. It's impossible.
There's another thing that, you know, you break it down with the hard numbers, and it is box office fact. Okay, Gone with the Wind, this, that, and the other. But you know what Gone with the Wind had in its favor? What, 75 years to get those numbers? It wasn't achieved in 1939. Obviously, it's had the momentum of history. And here we are saying, well, not us, but media hyping Avatar, going, you know, within its release of, you know, it came out in December, just, you know, a month and a half ago or whatever. And here we are going, oh my God, it's the biggest of all time. It's like, well, what's that going to be in 75 years? Is it going to jump from the 26th slot down to like 150 by then?
Well, yeah. And of course, that's always been a big argument for Star Wars, because the thing's been released theatrically over and over and over again. There was the big release of the original classic trilogy before the special editions came out. And then the special editions spent months in the box office. And then when the prequels came out, it seemed they were in theaters longer than your average film. I mean, 3-4 months later, you're driving down the street and the damn Phantom Menace is still playing at the Bijou. So that can be said. But you got to give it up to films like E.T., where E.T., if you recall, it took a long, long, long time just for that thing to be released for the home market. It was like the movie that was never going to be released on the home market. And it came out maybe like 7-8 years after theatrical release. So when you're looking at the numbers for E.T. and E.T.'s crack in the top 10, you kind of have to bow in acknowledgement that was a powerful film and the numbers back it up.
Yeah. I have to read a comment from Mark, our illustrious engineer, who typed in our private Skype chat here. He says, I'll give it this regarding Avatar. Knight Rider is supposed to be the Lone Ranger with a car, and I like Knight Rider, but at least Glenn Larson admitted he was ripping off another show. So, yeah, and what I haven't seen come to fruition, and I thought would for sure, was not so much the comparison to Dances with Wolves and Pocahontas, but Robert Heinlein novel, I think, from 1959 or something like that, where the story was about a paraplegic going to an alien world and being able to put his consciousness into the native's body and all that. I mean, all the similarities were just like shocking, that all the plot points and this, that, and the other. It's like, you can argue that this rips off, quote unquote, this story, blah, 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 Star Wars, which obviously meant a lot to all of us. You know, that's hardly an original story. People can laugh and point at that and saying, oh my God, Lucas ripped off this, that, and the other from history and mythology and blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah, but Lucas wasn't talking about Star Wars for 15 years, and Lucas didn't have a $500 million budget for Star Wars. So, I mean, you're going to have to keep it in that perspective, too. Avatar was just marketed to death prior to it coming out. We've heard about it from its inception when, you know, 3/4 of our chat room weren't even born yet. People were talking about Avatar, James Cameron's next big project. So this had a very long time to kind of simmer and stew out there in the anticipation built. And while you guys were talking, the only thing that keeps screaming in the back of my head is I can't wait for the next Oscars, the Academy Awards. I want to see if everybody else holds this movie in such high regard when it comes time to vote. Really, I mean, is it visually appealing? Yes. People in the chat room are saying yes, it looks great. It's incredible. The visuals, one person, I don't want to scroll up because I'm lazy, said the visuals are great. I don't care about the story. And that's where I kind of have a problem, me personally. I'm not saying it's wrong for somebody to have that opinion, but I want some depth. A film for me is escapism. And if I'm listening to just really bad dialogue and looking at wooden actors, it draws you out of the element, much why I hate the Star Wars prequels. You can't sing its accolades. So I'm just wondering if they'll bear down a little bit on this film after the hype's kind of burned away a little bit. And see how the Academy reacts to Avatar. And then I think I'll either have a lot of positive or negative things to say about the future of Hollywood at that point.
I have to comment on this. I've said this before on one of my other shows, specifically R&D, about the Academy Awards and all those different award shows. I don't like them at all. I don't think they have a lot of credit to them. It's like giving yourself a pat on the back. It's the community giving itself a pat on the back. And that always rubs me the wrong way. Of course, I'm horribly cynical about that kind of thing. So,
are we over the Marissa Tomei thing yet? Come on.
I don't even know what that is. Who is that?
You ever saw My Cousin Vinny?
No.
Oh, moving on.
Yeah, we're feeling old. But if anyone's interested in Avatar coming on video, as of right now, Fox's Rupert Murdoch says that it could be as early as June, maybe later, and it will only be 2D at this point. So, yeah.
I'm not that young. I'm turning 23 on the 7th.
Oh, youngins.
No, in comparison, yes, you are that young.
Sorry.
Oh, God. So, let's see.
Kyle, please.
I'll take us somewhere else. All right. Now, today, as of this broadcast, which is a couple days before the Super Bowl, so everyone listening after the Super Bowl, we're not going to talk about sports or anything, but M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong's Last Airbender trailer came out today, posted online, and it seems to have turned a lot of heads. A lot of people that were talking shit about it before have watched it and now seem to have maybe still a bit of skepticism, but a little more positive outlook on it. I watched it today, and basically it is a teaser, like all Super Bowl movie spots. It shows you enough visual elements to like make you go, ooh, ah, wow. And yeah, it's pretty effects ridden because obviously the concept of air bending, fire bending, water bending, this, that, and the other, you see all that. You don't see the child actor playing Aang actually say anything. You have a narrator kind of setting the tone, and you see these action shots that do that cliched thing that you saw so much from Zack Snyder's style in 300 and Watchmen that has been done to death and people are getting tired of, with the whole fast motion to slow motion to fast motion again and all that. I'll admit it does look better and I will give it more credit than initially. And but it does come down to, well, okay, you made a pretty trailer. Does it make it a great movie? We'll have to find out. It doesn't come out until summertime. But have either you guys seen the trailer yet?
I have not seen the trailer, but I will say this. I've practically seen the movie already with how much Rob talks about it. Rob is just ecstatic about how great this movie is going to be, according to him. So I've heard a lot of details, and I'm very interested to actually see this preview. And I haven't seen it, and I didn't know it was out.
I literally just watched it while Kyle was talking because I tried watching it during pre-show, couldn't get it to load. So my gut reaction right here on the spot, it looked freaking sweet. And, you know, coming from me, and Kyle's already rolling his eyes like, oh my God, I can't believe Steve actually likes something.
Yeah.
but the cartoon was amazing. And from what I just saw in this 30-second trailer, it's the cartoon on the big screen with live actors. The bending looks great. I think the representation of Aang looks really good. I like seeing him in the iceberg at the very beginning of the trailer, very true to the series. So I know you can't judge a movie in 30 seconds, but I'm a hell of a lot more excited for the film now after watching the original teaser trailer. So if you're a Last Airbender fan and you haven't seen the trailer yet, check it out right now. We're not going anywhere. You get another half hour or so. So check it out. Give us your opinion in the chat.
We've got it. We got it linked on our Facebook page. Search out the Big Ball Broadcast, and we have a direct link on thebigballbroadcast.com. We post daily links there to geeky news. So scroll down, and you will see a direct link to that teaser Super Bowl ad for The Last Airbender. And yeah, I mean, I didn't have any hope really at all. The very first teaser thing, okay, it looked okay, but it was basically one shot or a couple of shots. This one's a lot more representative. It looks better. I know if I were M. Night, I'd feel a lot better knowing that not everyone is just like taking a giant crap all over it. Like he's had a really bad career. He like peaked early with his first big box office hit, The Sixth Sense, and then Unbreakable, which I also thoroughly enjoyed, and then Signs to a bit. And then after that, complete utter crap. It's hard to find anyone that can say, oh, I enjoyed The Village, except, but, you know, there's always a qualifier to it. And it's like, who likes Lady in the Water? Who likes The Happening? I don't know anyone who likes, not The Happening. Is it the, whatever it is, the last thing that he did?
I think he appreciates the weight of the situation. This isn't just a cartoon being made into a feature film. This is the cartoon that proved the Western market still is alive. In a time where anime became incredibly dominant in the States, here was a domestic production by Nickelodeon that floored everybody. It came from out of nowhere. And the one thing I'll always remember is reading all these articles about the hype of this show, about how great the show was, and reading comments and forums and everything, and realizing parents were watching it with their kids. You had an audience that literally went from like 4 years old to 40 years old, and young and old were just really enjoying the crap out of this. So it's a big deal whether or not this film succeeds or not. If this film succeeds, it's just going to bankroll Nickelodeon, especially with them having bought the license for the Ninja Turtles from Eastman and Laird, and the money that, and the backing they can put behind that, and really establish these dominant Western cartoons. And Nickelodeon Pictures is also heavily involved in this. Of course, you know, Shyamalan doesn't have carte blanche to do whatever he wants. I'm sure he's reeled in quite a bit. I'm sure he was hired more so for his cinematography, for his directing abilities. I'm sure the script has been incredibly refined and approved by the creators and everything. So he's kind of in a can't-fail situation. And it's pretty wild, too, because giving him a shot to do this and have it be successful, it's going to invigorate his career, I mean, for better or worse. But I think it's very well funded and very well scrutinized. And again, keep my fingers crossed, hoping for the best. And I've seen nothing but good so far.
I just finished watching the trailer, and I, at least from what I've been able to gather, I have no knowledge. I don't even know what an airbender is. I don't even know if there was an anime series on this or not. When I Google searched it, I think there was or something. I don't know. If the movie can. Thank you, Queen Lol. They bend air. That was so helpful. That was brilliant. Wow. Anywho, if this movie can live up to the images and the primal, I'm not going to say ideas that the trailer puts in your mind, then I think it's going to be a fantastic movie. If they can put a storyline around these images, yes, this is going to be a great movie. It's going to be a hit.
I read on ain'titcool.com today, there was a test screening, early screening. So obviously the effects aren't done, the score's not done, this, that, and the other's not done. And it had two wildly divergent reviews. One said it was the kind of akin to Narnia as opposed to Lord of the Rings. So enjoyable, but not breathtaking, not, you know, a great classic journey that you're going to want to relive over and over again. The other one just said the kid's awful, the acting's awful. This, that, and the other. So M. Night movies do tend to polarize audiences, so maybe that continues. But you know, it is an early, the very first test screen. Movies go through an evolution, so maybe it'll be tightened, it'll be tweaked, or and all that, and we'll get something worth seeing this July, I think.
I'll say this, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Lito, but if they actually cast Mark Hamill as the Fire Lord, I won't even have to go see it and just talk about what a wonderful, phenomenal, amazing movie it is.
Oh, Mark Hamill. Interesting. I was going to say, I love how, and I hate to reference the chat because I know the podcast listeners aren't going to be able to understand what I'm saying, but I love how in the chat you have everyone saying M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong. I've never heard that before, but that is funny.
That's a creation. That's patented and trademarked, and everybody knows money now.
Yeah, pay up, guys. Yeah. It's just kind of an inside joke, but we call him Shyamalama Ding Dong.
That's brilliant.
And yeah, the Mark Hamill thing threw you off because I know you said you admitted you hadn't seen the TV series, which actually isn't anime, but it's animated in an anime style. It actually was a Nickelodeon cartoon series done here, and Mark Hamill was one of the voices on the cast.
Oh, okay. I get what you're, okay. It's not just, you know, trying to slap a big name on it.
Oh, no. He was the big name of the show, even though it's funny because, like Kyle knows, with anime, because of label laws and because of cost, when in anime you hear a young child, it's most likely a female voice actress voicing that person, be it a boy or a girl. What Nickelodeon did with Avatar that was pretty unique was they actually cast kids in that age range to voice the main characters. Basically, everybody here in Avatar is voiced by somebody their gender and their age. And it lends that legitimacy to a lot of the dialogue that they're having. You hear those childish tones and a lot of those undertones and the innocence and the emotional weight of what's coming out of their mouth. And it's an easy thing to translate to the screen because you're casting kids in those ages to do these roles. So I think you have a much easier time doing a transition from something like this to the big screen to something like anime, where now you're hoping you can get a kid that can act and emote like somebody in this age range. So I don't know, kind of got off tangent there, but I'm so excited, especially after watching that trailer. Whoa.
It's understandable. And one movie that, well, it wasn't a movie. I shouldn't say that. It wasn't a movie. It was a mini series, but hopefully you guys remember the Dune mini series that was on Sci-Fi a little bit back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One reason I really enjoyed both of those is they really did a very good job with picking actors for that. Not only did they really try to stay within the confines of what the book had available, but the specific characteristics, well, some specific characteristics of what the book defined as characters. And yes, so people know, I do take my name from Dune. I admire Duke Leto, but that's beside the point. I hope they do it with the new Dune movie that's in the fetal stages, as I like to say. I'm really looking forward to that because I'm a Dune nut, but that's neither here nor there.
What do you think about the word that just came out today? Actually, this is all this late breaking stuff that director on the new version of Dune is considering making it 3D. Does that just make you just roll your eyes or make you more excited?
That's an eye roller. I will say that is an eye roller. You hit the nail on the head with that one. I think it's a gimmick. I don't like gimmicks. I want actual content. I work in radio. I don't like gimmicks. I get a billion gimmicks every day, and it gets old very quickly for me.
Yeah, I don't think people like wearing glasses, especially people who wear glasses to begin with. You didn't get too many people complaining about the 3D in Avatar because the 3D has come a long way. Long way. So, but still, people, you know, it's like, I just want to watch. I just want to soak it in with my own two eyes.
You know, screw 3D until we have actual holograms that we can, you know, set up in a room and it's actually a 3D movie that we could watch as a hologram without glasses. Screw 3D until we can get to that.
That's what I'm saying. You know, 3D now, it's nothing new. You know, they started making 3D films in 1939, and it had a little reinvigoration during the 50s with the B movies. And I remember as a kid watching Creature from the Black Lagoon broadcast on TV in 3D, and you could go to your little participating stores and pick up the 3D glasses. So it's nothing new, but at the same time, it's like virtual reality. Like where they're going now. VR came out late 80s, early 90s. It never lived up to its potential. It never was what it was touted to be. And I say that with 3D. Until it is what it's touted to be, where it's a real user-friendly experience, it's going to be a novelty. It's going to become very cliche. I see 3D following the whole trend of, you know, post-Dark Knight superhero films. You know, that film was dark and gritty. It made $1 billion, so superhero films had to be dark and gritty. Well, Avatar was in 3D, and it made an assload of money. Everything has to be in 3D. I disagree with that philosophy. It's nice icing on the cake, but it takes away from what the cake should be, even though it's a lie.
Yeah, and on the topic of it was Mark Hamill and Avatar and Batman. When I think of Mark Hamill, obviously I think of Luke Skywalker, but I also think of Joker. I automatically hear that voice and that laughter in my head. It's like, that's Mark Hamill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he reinvented himself as an actor, and you know, he's like one of the most prolific, most respected voice actors out there right now. And you know, he's in demand, and he's obviously, you know, still a celebrity, but you know, he's not just another washed up Star Wars actor. He's actually reinvented himself, and he's very, very respected by myself. I hope I get to work with him once someday, since I do this or attempt to for a living. I know that's on my to do list before I die. That's on my bucket list. I have to work with Mark friggin' Hamill.
That's a good one. That's a big one.
It's kind of depressing to know that as big as the franchise is, you know, that is Star Wars, that Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford are the only ones that have a viable career. Unless you consider drinking vodka and scoffing Percocet's career like Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, she's done okay to a degree. She's had some New York Times bestsellers as a writer, and she's punched up some screenplays, but yeah.
Because her writing's generally about her drinking vodka and swallowing Percocets.
And being all coked up during Empire.
You know, little things.
It's the tiny things in life that make the real difference. Like tiny little pills.
Yes. Blue pill or red pill? What's it going to be, Neo?
Oh, I wish I took the blue pill.
Duh! All right. Steve, take us somewhere.
Okay, looking at the clock, I have a feeling this is going to be the last story of the show. And this was incredibly controversial, so I'm, you know, really interested to get everybody's opinion on this one. But Microsoft is apparently being sued over Xbox Live points. Microsoft's Xbox Live point system is arguably deceptive, where a $10 item will cost you 1,200 points, where most people think 100 points equals $1. It doesn't, and Microsoft now have been sued over another points issue, which deals with the leftover points that members buy. For instance, buying 1,600 points, spending 1,500 points on them on DLC, and then you're stuck with 100 points, which can't really get you anything, and the points are not redeemable. You're essentially forced to buy more points, and if you want to spend the last 100 points, and most people never do, and Microsoft is basically profiting from leftover points. The class action lawsuit was filed by Samuel Lassoff, a Philadelphia-based attorney who claims that Microsoft engages in a scheme to unjustly enrich itself through their fraudulent handling of its Xbox Live accounts, and claims that hundreds of Xbox Live members aren't getting what they're actually paying for, saying Microsoft breached the contract by collecting revenues for digital goods and services that were not provided. Microsoft has yet to file a response for the case. The company has been dealing with criticism over the points system for a while, and said that they may even scrap the whole system and switch to cash purchases only. However, there's no indication that this will happen anytime soon. So, discuss.
Is it wrong for me to think this situation is kind of silly?
Well, which situation? The fact that it's being sued or the point system to begin with?
That they're being sued. I mean, if you don't like the point system, don't spend money on it. That's how I view it. But admittedly, that's not always the case. I just think it's silly to sue someone over this. This is why I don't generally like lawyers. I can't stand that someone would justify trying to cause trouble over this small a thing. I mean, there are a lot more important things in life that law specialists could spend their time on.
Now, see, I'd have to immediately counter and say, imagine going through life with only $10 bills. And any time you went to the store and you made a purchase, you could only use $10 bills. And when you were done with your transaction, you didn't get your change back. I can see that parallel here with the Microsoft issue. If you can only buy blocks of points And you know nothing in the store is ever going to equal the amount of points you bought. There's always going to be a remainder. They've spent a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort coming to that conclusion that there's always going to be that remainder of points in the hopes that you're going to buy more points to use up those points you already have. And it's a very cyclical process that never, ever ends. Is it devious? Is it unsportsmanlike? Is it unethical for Microsoft to do that? Yeah, I think so, because they can sell more mathematically correctly proportioned number of points and not have this remainder issue. What they're doing is intentional. It's not an accident. It's not not having forward thinking. They did it knowing that you're going to buy more points. And if you don't, oh well, because we profited from points you'll never use. So I think there actually is some legitimacy to having at least a concern about this. I'm not saying you necessarily have to sue them to make a point, but you know, some kind of big internet F you to Microsoft saying, hey, look, what you're doing is really unfair and you need to change your business practices if you want to keep your customers happy.
I can understand that. My only issue with that really is it's okay to do things that make people, it kind of entices people to come back and buy more, because eventually you will spend most of those points that you're building up. I mean, you may not spend exactly all of them, but it's not a Steam service where you pay for the game itself. It's kind of a mini game where you're trying to balance out, okay, I have this many points, I need to buy this many more points, I can buy this extra if I want to spend this much more money, that kind of thing. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it another level of not necessarily entertainment, but interaction with the company and with the service as a whole. Now, you're right about the internet giving a big middle finger to Microsoft over this, which I can certainly understand. It goes along with my concepts of internet honesty. And I've kind of coined that word. It's more a situation of if the internet as a whole is going to give them the middle finger, then it's automatically justified, at least in my opinion.
I think that people can make so much more ground if they just unify with an email campaign or a handwritten letter campaign or something. This frivolous lawsuit stuff, it's going to get thrown out. I mean, yeah, it's a pain in the ass when you got 100 points left and what can you do with it? Nothing, really. 100 points doesn't get you anything. It doesn't even get you like a standard definition episode of a TV show that you want to watch. Or if you want to buy something and dress up your Xbox Live avatar, it's all priced slightly above that, and then you're screwed into paying another, what, $5, $6 to get the minimum point balance. I wish Microsoft would just get rid of the points and make it easy. $5 is $5. $10 is $10. You know, whatever. Just spell it out nice and clear, because, yeah, we're lazy. We like things simple. And then, yeah. I mean, if you have stuff left over, then, yeah, accrue it or make different value systems available.
I would agree with that. And Steam specifically does a fantastic job of that. I also would like to say that GOG.com does a fantastic job of that. They don't get nearly as much press as I feel they deserve, bringing back these really old games that don't run on new Windows systems. But GOG.com, they offer really low prices for older games. That sounds like an advertisement. I'm not trying to advertise for them. But you get the idea. You pay exactly for the game, you understand exactly what you're paying for, and you're getting exactly that.
And no remainder that just sits there squandered. And
then, yes, yes.
Yeah, so I personally predict this will get thrown out. I think fans would make a lot more headway if they just, you know, get on the forums. Of course, Microsoft does have to listen to their fans, at least to a degree. They have to see what sort of feedback they're getting about this and just adjust their business models accordingly.
I don't think legally it can go anywhere, because I'm sure there's something, you know, in page 37, paragraph A, section C, in their terms of service that says, this is how we do it. You know how we roll. If you're going to engage in our service, then you're doing it at your own risk and at your understanding that this is how we operate. So legally, I'm sure they've got it under control. I just don't want to see it get squashed entirely. I think there should be some sort of backlash on Microsoft for this, because it's rather deceptive if you think, you know, you go in naively, $10 isn't 1,000 points, then it's going to be corrected. You don't want that that buyer confusion, I guess. It's not very reputable for them.
I can't imagine this lawsuit being successful if Microsoft hasn't been saying all of a sudden that, you know, you won't get this many points, or you might get this many points, or they've, you know, been dishonest with how many points you get per dollar. But if it's right out in the open, it says you will get this many points per dollar spent, or this many points per package you buy of points.
I have to interrupt real quick and see what Sane Angel said in the chat. And she says, why? Walmart does not listen to their customer base. Why should Microsoft? And it's so true. And therein lies the issue. Not enough people complain. When you have millions of people signed up on Xbox Live, gleefully paying their $50 a year to be gold members, yeah, it's not a big concern to Microsoft. When, you know, tens of millions of shoppers are buying stuff at Walmart every day. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're kicking their employees when they're down. It doesn't matter. The numbers are there. The money's coming. Everybody's happy. So, yeah, it is up to people who are concerned about this. It's up to you, the gamer. If you're on Xbox Live and if you don't agree with the point system, yeah, you have to actually do something about this. People aren't going to do it for you. The company doesn't care because they're still making billions.
And as yes, long Steve? As the money's coming in, it doesn't matter.
And you made a good point, Steve, about, I mean, when you fire up your Xbox and your Xbox Live account for the first time and there's just all that legalese and you agree to the terms of service, it's got to be written in there. Those lawyers had to cover their ass so they could throw away this sort of lawsuit saying, no, you agree. You bought the console. I mean, because where are you going to drop the line? Are people going to start suing over the fact that video games cost on average $60 nowadays? I mean, that's a pain in the ass, too. I hate the fact that, yeah, you can get a great game like God of War, but it's still $60 friggin', and in this economy especially, you know, but, you know, we're not going to sue over it.
No, if anything, you should applaud it because it forces the developers and these big companies to put out quality product. If you're fighting for my dollar, then make it damn worth it. So I as much as the economic situation sucks, I do encourage it amongst the developers to be really competitive about that.
I agree. That's all I got.
Very nice.
Probably have time for one more story, Kyle, if you want to pull one out of your fuzzy buttons.
I'll pull one out of my fuzzy buttons. Let's just stay on topic with the video games thing here. March 16th shows the release of God of War 3. So I know that, Steve, you're going to disappear off the planet. If I happen to have money, then I'll find a way to do it too. Even though I have not beat the first two, I'm still on the first one. Damn it. But I did play that demo, and my God, is it sweet.
It's a wrap. It's done. Fini. You will not see me if I'm still playing that game. It's the franchise I just lived for. It was what kept the PlayStation 2 relevant when it should have died. It was amazing. You know, not only was it the best seller the PS2 ever saw, it was the last Sony game the PS2 ever saw. Talk about a going out party. It's heralded as the best action franchise that ever existed. And I can't take any away from that. It's epic. It is the true definition of epic. And if you haven't played God of War and you can't draw a correlation to what I'm saying, then, you know, tis to shame on you. You are not a gamer. Your gamer card is officially revoked. So to see what the PS3 can do, we haven't seen that yet on God of War. We haven't seen, you know, how the engine is going to run all this, the water effects and the shadows and the dynamic lighting. And then playing the demo, it was like, oh my God, it shivered down my spine. It's like, holy shit, here's a franchise that's still in its third, well, technically fifth, if you count the mobile game and the PSP game, Chains of Olympus, its fifth iteration, still stronger than ever. I mean, I think for a video game franchise that really speaks volumes, that five iterations into a game and it's only getting better, who else can say that?
You know, and you guys are, I'm going to get skewered for this. I understand. I don't like the God of War series.
You will never be on this show again. Ungrateful prick.
I'm still holding out hopes for eventually having episode 3 of Half-Life 2 at some point in existence. It's not turning into another Duke Nukem Forever. I swear to God.
Okay. And that's why I said during my blissful rant there, action adventure game. Everybody has, you know, what Kyle calls their geek. You get whatever gets your geek on. If you're into FPS, then that's your geek. If you're into MMORPGs, that's your geek. As I said not too long ago, my biggest issue is I don't have the same schedule as everybody else. If I want to play on my Xbox or my 360, I can't guarantee that somebody that I know I could play against, because playing against the kids, fuck that. They're horrible on Xbox Live. Kyle and I are literally the country apart from each other. So 4 o'clock in the morning for me is 1 o'clock in the morning for Kyle. It's not going to happen. So I play a lot of action adventure games because it's one player and it's kind of that pick up and play, and I can shut it off and save it and go do something else. So it's whatever you're really geeky about, whatever you're passionate about. So if you're passionate about that genre, hands down, best game ever. I couldn't herald it as the best video game ever, but for its genre, best thing going.
So Lito, what moves you? So if it's not that genre, then what kind of game is your crack? Is it RPGs?
I tend to bounce around between different forms of RPGs and shooters. Like right now, I am a complete, with what time I've had, I am just devoted to Mass Effect 2. And on that subject, by the way, Tali Zora in that game is the hottest character I've ever seen in any kind of video game in my entire life. Just me, you know, saying that. But yeah, that game, though, has absorbed my existence. I haven't even raided in a month, which is really weird for me because I love raiding in WoW. I'm a druid. Sorry.
It's important you get that out of your system. That's what we know. Yes.
I can't help myself at this point. I'm so bad. I got in contact with someone on DeviantArt about doing an artistic rendition of her.
Well,
my background.
All that comes to my mind when you say that, oh, she's the hottest video game character ever, is Rule 34. If it exists, there's porn of it.
And I know I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Come on. No, well, you searched for it. Google searched it and you found it. Come on. Admit
it's
it.
It's not Google searching alone. It's DeviantArt searching, because DeviantArt is the greatest artistic website. If you want art, it's there. It's such an awesome, awesome website for that. But it's also filthy. It is absolutely filthy. And I've seen some things that I don't want to repeat ever again.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. So you're big on Mass Effect 2. It's topical. It's the huge thing that gamers are talking about. So you may as well give us a quick bullet point review.
All right. Mass Effect 2, really fast. You are Commander Shepard. You've done a lot of awesome stuff in the galaxy, made a lot of choices, especially if you played Mass Effect 1, which I haven't. I really should. I need to, but that's not the point. You all of a sudden get blown up by this random ship that no one has ever seen before, that came out of nowhere, that can see you through your cloaking device. You die. You get resurrected by this really evil corporation that just wants to use you and your history and your talents. And you're like, ah, okay, fine, whatever, I'm going to save people, blah, 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 blah. You go out and you start investigating this evil race of beings called the Collectors that are all of a sudden stealing entire colonies of human beings. And along the way, you get a lot of new people involved in you. One of those characters is Tali Zora, which is an original character from the original Mass Effect game, which you can now have a relationship with. As a side note, once again, you couldn't in the first Mass Effect. You now can.
Wow. Hit X three times, it grabs her boobs, what?
No, well, the thing is, Tali Zora has to stay in a complete environmental suit, because her body is really weak to germs and infections. But besides that, she's just so adorable. And she has the mild Russian accent, which just makes me melt.
Oh, and as Mark the engineer would say, pixels can't get pregnant, so it's all good.
That's also very true. Anywho, it's a fantastic game. The combat is much smoother, I'm told, from the original Mass Effect. A lot of people have actually been complaining about how Mass Effect 2 is, for all intents and purposes, dumbed down compared to Mass Effect 2. It's dumbed down, which I don't know. I need to experience Mass Effect 1 to actually say that truthfully, but that's a review that's come through.
Oh, my. Deadly Lufiner.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm not going to say anything.
I tapped that shit so hard. Wow. Okay.
You know, that's the strange part. I will say this. A lot of people that have played the game in my group of friends have said, oh, Miranda's the hottest one there. I disagree. I don't like Miranda. I think she's a bitch. I don't like her at all. I'm like, no, I'd smack her upside the head and say, get the hell away from me. Is that wrong?
Oh, no. To each their own, sir. To each their own.
Oh, I'm trying to be nice.
Well, very nice. Well, I guess with that, there's your glowing recommendation from Lido from the OMFG Network, Original Media for Gamers, which is live now. And that URL, sir, is
OMFG.fm.
That's right.
I'm trying to get 24... my radio voice on.
Yes, get your DJ on. Yeah, 24/7 streaming content, all catering to gamer culture. I know we're all going to give it a try and a check out there. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. And I'm sure with you and your ginormous staff can get some really interesting content going.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Ginormous. As opposed to vaginormous. You have an enormous vagina, then, never mind. Wow, okay. So, I just...
This needs to make me giggle.
Oh, yay, giggles. Oh my god. So check out Lido. Lido, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's so much fun to come on different podcasts, and especially yours. I've listened to you guys since you originally came on as an affiliate of the Geek Media, and I love your guys' show.
Thank you. Thank you for the support. And we love scratching each other's back. It's always a wonderful thing. So we appreciate that support very much, sincerely, sir. We're also going to wrap up and say thanks to all the people in our illustrious chat room. We've got all the lurkers. We've got people who've been there like Agent 119, Axum White, Badger King, Carpe Fortuna, Car Cullen, Deadly Lufa, Elephant L, Evan, Golden Panther, Gray Fox, JCS, Jenna, Kamen Rider, Kamina, Kiva Kesticles, KMC. Yes, that's Kevin Connolly. You've heard us on heard him on our show before. Me, Lido, Miss November, Otherworld Steve, Queen Lol, the Banhammer, Saigoto, Saiyan Angel, Sloths, DDD, the Golden Ninja, and everyone else who's been here throughout the rest of the show. God, we've had over 230 visitors all in all here tonight. Wow, that's cool. Thanks to good old Mark, the engineer, behind the scenes, pushing buttons, making sure that we are live. And anything to plug, Steve?
Just my anus after this fine show.
Yeah!
Oh, wow, plugging anuses. EBERecords.com. I'm going to do your plug for you, Steve. EBERecords.com to check out all sorts of cool tunage, such as Perimeter of the Void, which is Steve's band. Go to my website, KyleAbear.com. You can learn all about private voice acting sessions. And for the rest of our illustrious credits, that's coming up next because Mark's going to hit play on that as soon as I shut up. So, until next time, this is Kyle Abear.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Check out the BigBaldBroadcast.com, the central hub for all the geeky news that you can use. There you can listen to new episodes, go back through the archives, and view our latest Twitter news. You can send your mail and MP3 comments to mail@thebigbaldbroadcast.com. Subscribe now via iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, or your favorite RSS aggregator to have episodes downloaded automatically. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Music provided by DJ Unicron and Zero Reynolds.